from Quality Radio Productions. It's the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from radio's golden age, coming to you from New York's Finger Lakes region. I'm Jake Longwell, opening the hour with an episode of You Bet Your Life. This comedy quiz program was immensely popular on both NBC radio and television in the 1950s. The series, hosted by Groucho Marx and featuring longtime NBC announcer George Fenneman. This broadcast is from October 25th of 1950. For those not familiar with the series, each week there was a secret word, and if one of the contestants said the secret word, they won some extra prize money. For this episode, the secret word was air, A-I-R. It's You Bet Your Life, opening up this edition of the Upstate Radio Theater.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is air, A-I-R.
Really?
You bet your life! The more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Groucho!
That's me, Groucho Marx. Well, here I am again with $2,000 for one of our couples tonight. Fenneman, who's first to try for it?
Well, a bachelor and a spinster, Groucho, selected by our studio audience just before we went on the air.
Land sakes.
Their names are Ida Easley and Jack Wayne, and here they come now. Come on in here, folks, and meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kids, for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Ida Easley, eh?
Ida Easley.
Oh, that's an Easley name to remember. You're the spinster, eh?
I am.
Mm-hmm. Let me see you spin. Where are you from, Ida?
I'm from Taylorville, Illinois.
Where?
Taylorville, Illinois.
Taylorville? Did you have a job, Ida?
I'm a matron at the Douglas Aircraft Company in Taylorville.
Oh, thank you. Ida, of course you realize that half of that swag belongs to Mr. Wayne over here.
Yeah, that's what worries me. I think he's more worried than I am, for I have a hold of it.
Well, eventually he may be holding you and the $50, eh?
Well,
Jack,
time will tell.
Well, what do you do, Jack?
Oh, I run a streetcar.
Where are you from, Jack?
Born in the heart of Boston.
Why did you leave the bean town?
Oh, my feet got itchy, and I want to roam.
You went to Rome, and how'd you like it there? Where do you run your trolley?
On the track.
Caught me napping, eh? I suppose that's one of the little jokes you streetcar men use to amuse each other back in the car barn, is that it?
That's an old joke.
It is, eh? Well, it may interest you to know that while you're knocking each other out back in the car barn, the city's pulling up the tracks to make way for a bus line. Jack, how come you're a bachelor? Is it because in your job you see too much of women?
Oh, I see plenty of them.
You do, huh? You could see a lot more of them if you'd step off your streetcar and watch them climb on. I always get on last. They think it's politeness, but it isn't really. Jack, if you found the right woman, would you be interested in matrimony?
Oh, I guess I would.
What would you consider the right woman?
Or a housekeeper, a good housekeeper, a good cook. And they'll go to a ball game with me once in a while.
You don't need one girl. What you need is the YWCA, Jack. How old are you, Ida, if that isn't too...
I think I'm about his age.
Frankly, you don't care how old he is, do you?
Thought of such a thing.
You're his age anyway, no matter how old he is.
No matter how old.
Are you a good cook, Ida?
I think I'm good.
Do you like baseball?
Oh, very much.
Do you follow it quite closely?
Yes, I keep up the game.
I see. Well, I'm an average fan, too. What do you think of Sugar Ray Robinson's chances this year? You think he's going to break Babe Ruth's record?
Oh, I think he stands a very good chance.
Yes, but on the other hand, don't forget, he still has to beat Gussie Moran.
I know, I understand.
Well, you can't blame a girl for trying, I always say. As a matter of fact, I never said that before in my life. I don't know why I lie this way, eh? Would you get married tonight if the right man came along and knocked you off your feet?
Oh, I think I would.
You would. Well, look out for Ding Dong Daddy, are you? He can knock you off your feet and charge you 11 cents car fare at the same time. Well, you certainly make a nice couple. Just remember, none but the brave deserve the fare, Jack. Always remember that, eh? And you're just the one to collect it. Now, we're going to play You Bet Your Life for $2,000. But I want you to pay close attention to Fenneman over there.
Friends, when you select a dealer to service your car, you owe it to yourself to visit a member of the DeSoto Plymouth Dealer Organization. This nationwide group, there are over 3,000 of them from coast to coast, believes in the old-fashioned idea of courtesy and the modern idea of finest equipment, best trained men. As for the cars they handle, well, there just aren't any better than the big and brilliant DeSoto and the beautiful Plymouth. DeSoto is the car with smooth, sweeping lines that attract so much attention. You'll enjoy the experience of greater safety with DeSoto's powerful brakes that bring you to a smooth stop. No car in America has bigger brakes. DeSoto starts so quickly and powerfully and lets you drive without shifting. So drive a DeSoto before you decide on any car. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Look for those two great names linked together. DeSoto, Plymouth.
All right, now let's see if you two will get a chance at the $2,000. Fenneman, explain the rules.
All right. Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that 20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $2,000 DeSoto Plymouth question at the end of the show. You see, our other two couples are in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
All right, here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected birds, animals, and people as your category. Now, here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try?
$10.
$10. What animal do you associate with Jonah?
The whale.
The whale is right. Now, talk right up.
And you folks are on your way. You have $30.
All right, you got $30. Remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you try?
$20.
$20? What animal do you associate with the Pied Piper? Take a look at Jack.
They followed her up the street.
The Piper.
Well, I'm sorry. It's rats. You were on the right track. How much have they got now?
They now have $10, Groucho.
Well, that's a shame. You're down to
$10. That's a shame. We're down
to
$10.
Here's your third question. How much of the 10 will you try?
$5.
$5. Is that all right, Jack?
Yes, sir.
What animal do you associate with Daniel in the Bible?
Lion.
The lion is right, huh?
Well, they're climbing again. You now have $15.
All right, you got $15, and here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 15 will you risk?
Well, let's take 10.
$10.
$10. What animal do you associate with Lady Godiva?
Oh, the horse.
That's right, a horse is correct.
And they wind up with a grand total of $25.
Don't forget, you won how much?
$25.
$25, and you won $100. That's $125. Thanks, and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth Group.
Well, Groucho, our next couple has been in a waiting room off stage, so, of course, they don't know the secret word is air.
True, true.
Okay, fellas, you can bring them in now. We invited some lady barbers to the program tonight, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Miss Maybelle Taylor. Her partner is a married man, Mr. Thomas DeSilver. And here they are, folks. I'd like you to meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to You Bet Your Life, and if you say the secret word, you'll split $100 between you. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Maybelle Taylor, is that right?
That's right.
And Thomas DeSilva. You're a lady barber, Maybelle?
That's right.
Where are you from, Mabel?
Montana.
Montana, whereabouts?
Culbertson, Montana.
And Thomas DeSilva, you're a married man, huh?
That's right.
Is that your only claim to distinction, Thomas?
Yes.
What sort of work do you do, Tommy?
Retired police captain.
I'm glad I found that out. How long have you been married?
16 years.
You remember how you met your wife, huh?
Yes, but it's a long story.
Well, keep it down to 1,500 words, will you? I have to be in Pittsburgh a week from next Wednesday. Okay, go ahead. How'd you meet your wife?
We went down to Wildwood, New Jersey. Got a couple of bathing suits and took her down to Wildwood, New Jersey. Put a bathing suit on and then I gave her the engagement ring.
You're a pretty shrewd cookie, aren't you?
So after seeing her in the bathing suit, then I started singing proposal to her.
You sang a proposal?
Oh, yeah.
Well, how did you sing the proposal to her?
Let me call your sweetheart and gave her the engagement ring.
Would you mind singing a few...
Sing it. Oh.
Well, go ahead.
Let me call you sweetheart. I'm in love with you. Let me hear you whisper that you love me too.
Keep the love my son. In your eyes, how true.
If we had two more fellas, we'd have the worst quartet in this town.
I'm in love with you.
And she consented to marry you after that? That's the first time
years.
I ever sang a chorus in five keys. Now, Mabel, are you married?
No, I'm not.
You're not married, huh? Would you get married to a man who sang like that to you?
Well, certainly.
I never met a lady barber before. Aren't they pretty rare?
Well, I'd say there's possibly 15 of us in the city of Los Angeles.
No, that's medium rare. Now, what made you decide? What made you decide to become a barber or a tonsorial artist? Is that?
I wanted to make money enough to see myself through nurse's training.
And?
I'm still barbering.
What's the difference between a lady barber and a man barber?
There are several.
There are several differences?
There are several differences.
Well, I'm relieved to hear that. You better clarify it, Mabel. There's a hermit in Idaho who may have forgotten.
Well, we have a lighter touch, and we don't talk an ear off of you. Mm-hmm.
What do you do? Just shave it off, huh? I suppose you have a scrapbook where you keep all your clippings, Mabel?
Yeah? Yes.
Do any of your customers flirt with you, Mabel? The male customers?
Well, they're not really serious with me.
Now, how do you handle these Romeos?
Oh, I just kid them along. They like it.
Well, how do you kid them? Do you tell them jokes?
Yes, occasionally.
Well, tell us a joke. Go ahead. Pretend I'm sitting in your chair and you want me to forget how much all this is going to cost me. Now, you go ahead and tell me a joke.
Do you know the best way to save your hair?
Yes, put it in a cigar box. That's an old joke.
Do you know a way
tell me another joke, huh?
Do you know a way to avoid falling hair?
Yes, just step nimbly to one side, huh? That's even older than the other joke, huh? Do you know any more jokes, Mabel?
No, I believe not.
Go on, admit it. I'm too fast for you, Mabel.
Well,
grass,
your hair is getting a little bit thin.
Yeah, well, grass doesn't grow on a busy street, Mabel.
Well, I was going to say that grass doesn't grow on a cement highway either.
Mabel, I know just how your customers feel. My head is bloody but unbowed. Well, all right, now we're going to play You Bet Your Life, eh? Now, we'll see how you two make out in the battle for the $2,000. You got to work together as a team and run your $20 into more than our other couples. I can't tell you how much the other couples won, but Fenneman's going to remind our listeners.
The Bachelor and the Spinster won $25.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected nicknames of famous cities as your category. Here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try? Tommy, wake up. $10. You're going to ignore Mabel, huh? What city is known as the city of brotherly love?
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. That's where you...
They're on their way, Groucho. They have $30.
$30. Remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you try?
No,
talk right up.
10.
Make it 20.
All right. What city is known as the biggest little city in the world?
Reno, Nevada.
Reno, Nevada is right.
All your folks are refining now. It has
$50. Here's your third question. Now, how much will you bet?
50.
50. What city is known as the Mile High City?
Denver, Colorado.
Denver, Colorado.
and they've climbed to $100.
You've climbed as high as Denver, Colorado. Now, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 100 will you try?
Make it all. The last question.
Here's the last question.
Let it go.
You're going to shoot the works, huh? What city is known as the Smoky City?
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
That's right, is right. Thanks and good luck to the DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
Thank you very much. Now we're going to soon know who gets the chance at the big question, worth $2,000 tonight. Because at this point, the people who were just up here, the lady barber and the married man, are leading with $200, and the secret word is still air.
Uh-huh.
Okay, fellas, you can bring in our next contestants. We invited to the show tonight some professional golfers and some singing teachers. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Lucia Liverette and Mr. Paul Runyon. And here they come. Folks, I'd like you to meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to You Bet Your Life, folks. And if you say the DeSoto Plymouth secret word, you'll divide $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Lucia Liverette, huh? You're a singing teacher? Sounds like a pretty good record, Lucia. Where are you from, Sing Sing?
I'm from St. Louis, Missouri.
St. Louis, huh?
Yes,
you sing the St. Louis blues?
Well, no, not quite.
Paul Runyon, it's nice to see you again. I'm sure everyone is familiar with your name. What did you say your name was?
Paul Runyon.
Paul Runyon, huh? See there? Even you're familiar with it, huh? Well, let's see. You won the Davis Cup, the Whiteman Cup, and the men's singles at Forest Hills, didn't you?
You may have a good memory, but those are tennis terms.
Oh, wrong racket. What are some of your titles, then? What are some of your titles, Paul?
I was fortunate enough to win the National Professional Golfers Championship
PGA.
In 1934 and 1938.
That's pretty good for a little fellow like that, huh? All famous golfers have nicknames, Paul. What's yours?
Little Poison.
Little Poison, huh? They call me Big Schlemiel, huh? Why do they call you Little Poison, Paul?
Well, perhaps it's because I have been the thorn in the side of some heavier adversaries.
Very well put, Paul. And Lucia, you, what kind of singing do you teach?
Opera and classical and semi-classic.
You mean they have to study to scream like that, huh? Tell me, Rigoletto, can you teach anyone to sing?
I will say yes. Because I've never found anyone yet who could not learn if he had the correct technical work.
You should have been out here about 10 minutes ago. Huh? You'd be licking your wounds now, Lucia. All right, how would you teach me, Lucia? Boom, 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 boom. That's Lucia.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Well, to begin with, correct breathing.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yes,
inhaling.
Inhaling. Deeply. Relaxation so the air will keep coming.
There you are. You pick that out, Lucia, and be sure Paul gets 50 of it, huh? Well, Cadenza, are all singers alike, or is there a difference between them?
Oh, certainly.
What kind of voices do singers have?
Well, of course, to begin with, our first classification is there are women's voices and men's voices.
Well, I didn't know that. I must tell this to this Hyman. Suppose I wanted to get up a lady quartet. Could I find one who sings bass?
No. The contralto is as low as a lady goes.
You haven't been out with... Lucia, obviously, we haven't been out with the same kind of lady. Now, Paul, let's talk about golf. How long do you have to be a pro before you can become an amateur? Oh, no, my mistake. That's tennis. I was thinking of... What is your favorite club?
The Annandale Golf Club of Pasadena.
What's your best score for 18 holes?
On a regulation 18-hole championship course, 61 at the Forest Hill Field Club in Bloomfield, New Jersey.
How about, what does the average golfer go around in?
I think 95 to 100.
How about the girls? Don't some of the girls do better than that?
Oh, a good many of the girls go around and a great deal less. What time is your club open up in the morning? I remember the first time I played golf, I went around in 75. I didn't play at all in 76. I was busy at Valley Forge.
How can I improve my score? I shoot around 94. That's with cheating.
I think I'd advise you to take a few lessons from a competent instructor. Do a little practicing and a little playing.
I've taken lessons. It's hopeless.
Well,
how could I learn to win without playing well?
You might resort to a little pencil pushing, or you might have a hole in your pocket, or you might have a handy toe in the rough, or you might use a hand mashie more frequently.
How is it you know so much about those things? Tell me about that pencil pushing again, huh?
First of all, you have to forget to count over five.
On any hole?
Any hole.
What about the 540 at Hillcrest?
Well, I think you could still forget to count over five on that.
I do, but you know where I am? I'm in the first sand trap leading the tee. I met 11 Arabs the last time I played. You must have had a number of exciting moments as a professional golfer. Can you tell us about one of them, Paul?
Well, as a tournament player, I've had many exciting experiences. Perhaps the most exciting is during the playing of the international four-ball matches in Miami, Florida. I was partnered by Horton Smith in this best ball event, and on arriving at the fourth tee, I dropped a high five-iron shot right on the top of a head of a gentleman sitting on a camp stool behind the green. He had just reached up to take his hat off to polish his head with his handkerchief when the ball hit on the top of his head, and he dropped off of the seat like he'd been shot with a Winchester rifle. But on the next year, Horton and I incidentally won the first International Four-Ball Championship, and we were paired again as partners. The next year, arriving at the ninth green with 2,000 or 3,000 people down the left side of the fairway, Smith hit a booming hook down the left side. Down goes a man. Who is it? Our friend of the camp. And the publicity on the International Four-Ball matches the next year says that Dr. Johnson is in Miami to watch his perennial favorites, Runyon and Smith, in the International Four-Ball matches, but he'll gallery in an armored suit.
Well, it must be very handy to have a walking bullseye on the golf course. Huh? Now, Lucia, let's get back to singing again. Do you have any particular exercises you give your singing pupils?
Well, yes, there are several kinds of exercises, all to teach them freedom of breathing, and as I said, the free flow of air up into the resonance chambers, and then to make them relax and be happy about what they're doing, we give them a laughing exercise. They enjoy it. They laugh all the way from middle C up to high C.
I once laughed from Glendale to Burbank. But... What about demonstrating this exercise, Lucia? Eh?
We might take something a little lower, maybe.
Take something a little lower. Me, for example. Huh? You can't get any lower than that. Let's go, huh?
I see.
Tail loose, Lucia. Huh?
All right. The deep breath in the diaphragm. Then drop the jaw open for the air to go up, and then...
Well, the three of us could be very happy, Paul. We could all sing together, Mashies in the Cold, Cold Ground. Well, now you're going to play your bet your life. You beat the other two couples, and you'll get a chance at the $2,000 question. That's the DeSoto Plymouth question. Now, I can't tell you how much the other couples won, but Fenneman's offstage to remind our listeners.
The Lady Barber and the Married Man are ahead with $200.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected women athletes as your category. Now, here's your first question. How much will you bet?
$10.
In what sport is Gussie Moran famous?
Tennis.
Tennis is right, huh?
And on the way, they have $30.
Remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, how much of your $30 will you bet on your second question?
$20.
In what sport is Florence Chadwick famous? It's a tough one. Take a stab. No, I'm sorry. It's swimming. She broke Gertrude Edley's record for the channel.
They now have $10.
We now have $10, he said in a low, funereal voice, sir. Here's your third question. How much of the 10 you going to go for?
Nine.
Well, you're going to hang on the edge, huh, Paul? In what sport is Patty Berg famous?
Golf.
Golf is right, huh?
Well, we're on the way again. They now have $19.
All right, you guys, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 19?
The works.
You want to shoot the works? All right. In what sport is Barbara Ann Scott famous?
Ice skating.
Ice skating is correct.
And they wind up with a grand total of $38. And that means the Lady Barber and the Married Man with $200 get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $2,000 question. The best trained men, the best materials, and the best equipment. Those are the important things every DeSoto Plymouth dealer offers you car owners. And that's why you should take your car for service to a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. You see, DeSoto Plymouth dealers have men trained in the latest factory methods. This means that the mechanics who work on your car are experts. And in every DeSoto Plymouth dealer shop, you'll find special tools and costly equipment. In addition, right on hand, they have a large supply of factory-engineered and inspected Mopar parts. Yes, you'll like the way business is done at a DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Find this out for yourself and do it real soon. The very next time your car needs service, drive in where you see the sign of a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. And here's the Lady Barber and the Married Man all set for the DeSoto Plymouth $2,000 question. Good luck to you.
Here we go. For $2,000, I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you. So think carefully and please no help from the audience. Here it is. The longest battle of our Civil War was the Seven Days Battle. What city was the objective of this great struggle?
Richmond?
Richmond is right. That's right. You win $2,000. You had the right answer, so you win $2,000. What are you going to do with all that money?
Help her brother-in-law.
You're going to help your brother-in-law? Why?
Ill.
Oh, he's ill. Well, that's a fine way to spend it. And you, Mabel?
I'm going to give some to the cancer fund.
Come to the cancer fund. Well, those are worthy objectives, huh? Let's see. You won $2,000 plus $100 in the... How much did they win in the quiz?
$200 in the quiz.
$200 in the quiz and $2,000 cash and the secret word?
I don't think this couple said
didn't get the secret word.
Well, you won $2,200, $2,200. Congratulations and thanks to both of you from the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America.
Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, when the big question will be worth $1,000. And don't miss Groucho's television show, also presented by the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation.
And when you drive in, tell them Groucho sent you. Good night, folks. Just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a tip from the National Safety Council. Walkers wise, use their eyes. You Bet Your Life is transcribed from Hollywood, produced by John Goodell, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith, music by Jerry Fielding. This is George Fenneman signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Groucho Marx and You Bet Your Life. The secret word for that episode? Air, from October 25th, 1950, on NBC. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater, presenting an hour of old-time radio for your listening pleasure. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the Radio Theater, you can do so by email. The address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. And if you want more information about the show, including detailed show playlists, or if you want to listen to this and previous episodes in the series wherever and whenever you like, then please visit our blog and website at qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. This is Upstate Radio Theater program number 1702. We'll wrap up this hour of old-time radio with an episode of Box 13, a syndicated series from the late 1940s, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday. Holliday is an author and thrill seeker, and he invites people to suggest interesting and thrilling adventures to him, and they do so by writing to his post office box, Box 13. This broadcast, episode 12 in the series, released for syndication on November 7th of 1948. It's called Triple Cross.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Hey, look, boss, look at this. An ad in the Star Times out-of-town newspaper. Yeah.
Box 13, adventure wanted. We'll go any place, do anything. Well, this looks like the right answer, Tony. Yeah. I think I'll write a letter to Box 13.
The letter was postmarked from a city in Nevada. It came airmail, special delivery to Box 13 and me. It sounded like a great chance to grab a change of scenery and maybe a little fun. Fun? Brother, how wrong could I be?
And now, back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, Triple Cross.
Just run an advertisement in the Star Times, one that reads, Adventure Wanted, will go any place, do anything, and see what you get. A lot of them can be interesting, like the one I listened to Susie read. The one that came airmail, special delivery from Nevada.
Enclosed is enough money to buy you a plane ticket to Los Meros. You want adventure? All right. Come to Los Meros, register at the Paradise Hotel. Wait in your room until you're contacted.
And that's all it says, Susie?
That's all, Mr. Holliday. There's not even a signature, even. It's what's called an ominous letter.
What kind of a letter, Susie?
Ominous. You know, that means it's not signed by anybody.
The word you mean is anonymous.
Oh.
But you could be right after all. Well, Susie, lock up the office and look for me when you see me with a new plot and a nice tan. A new plot and a nice tan, I said. I got the plot, but the tan almost turned into a beautiful white pallor, the kind that goes well with lilies. The plane trip was smooth. The trip from airport to the Paradise Hotel was nice and easy. And the hotel itself? Well, it was the only one I could remember that looked like the ads in the travel folders. Oddly enough, there was a room reserved for me in my name. Okay, somebody checked and found out who I was. I explored the suite, thinking maybe I'd get a lead on what this was all about. But it was just a fancy set of rooms, all newly decorated. I sat down, and then, about a half hour later... Come in.
Message for you, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, thanks. Here you are.
Well, thank you.
Just a minute. Who gave this to you?
A man, sir.
What kind of a man? What'd he look like?
Oh, just a man, sir.
Oh, I see. A head, two eyes, nose, two ears, and a mouth. That his description?
Yes, sir. That's exactly what he looked like.
Good. Then I'll know him when I see him. Oh, did he ask for an answer?
No, sir. He just told me to bring the envelope to you. Will that be all, sir?
Oh, yes, thanks. Well, two $100 bills and a message that said, buy a red carnation in the flower shop and put it in your lapel. After dinner, go to the casino roulette table, buy $200 in chips and put them on number 18. If you win, walk away, wait 10 minutes, and put half the winnings on number 22. After you play, wait in the casino. So with a carnation in my lapel, I bought $200 in chips and walked to the roulette table. There weren't many players. It was a little too early for the big crowd. So I waited a minute and watched the play. Took a look at the croupier, but I might as well have been in Timbuktu. He didn't give me a tumble. Okay, the best way to see what was going to happen was to see. I shoved the whole 200 on number 18. One or two of the other players placed bets, and then...
No more bets, please. No more bets. Number 18, red and even. Your chips, sir.
The croupier shoved the winnings across to me. I watched his face. If he had any expression, it was on the soles of his shoes. Well, maybe $7,000 win was coming around here. I left the table, sat down, and did a little problem in arithmetic, which figured out to be $126,000. That's what I'd have if number 22 came up. And brother, it looked from where I sat as though it would. The 10 minutes went by, and I walked back to the table. Waited until the wheel stopped.
Number 16, red and even. Place your bets, please, ladies and gentlemen.
Slowly, I shoved 3,500 in chips to number 22. This time, the others around the wheel did look. 3,500 to 35-1. Then the wheel began to slow up.
No more bets, ladies and gentlemen. No more bets, please.
That croupier was as cold as the floor of a mausoleum. Somebody dropped a pin, and I heard it hit the floor. The white ball clicked, clicked, clicked its way until...
Number 22, black and even. Your chip, sir.
I cashed in the chips, and there I sat, with $126,000 tucked away in my inside coat pocket. Somebody had that wheel fixed for a killing. I began to wish I was back in my office. I didn't like it. A crooked play. Why? Who? I made up my mind to go to the owner of the place and wash my hands of the whole thing when...
Oh, there you are, Mr. Holliday. I've been looking for you. I have a message for you.
Yeah?
Well, it's verbal this time, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, what is it?
You're to go into the bar and wait.
Is that all?
Yes, sir.
The same man gave you this message?
Yes, sir.
Did he still have a head, two eyes, a nose, and two ears?
Yes, sir.
All right, here you are, kid.
Oh, thank you.
You know, if this keeps up much longer, you'll be able to retire on my tips alone.
Thank you, Mr. Holliday. Will that be all?
How much did this character give you to forget what he looked like?
Well, nothing, sir. Nothing at all.
And a smart boy like you should have taken a good look the second time.
Huh?
Especially since I asked about him after the first message.
Oh, he was big, dark, a little mustache, and had a little white scar over his right eye.
Will you take $5 for that information?
That's all right, Mr. Holliday. No charge for that service.
Good boy. I'll see you later.
Yes, sir, Mr. Holliday.
I walked toward the bar, wondering what was coming next. I didn't like that fortune burning the cloth in my pocket. The bar was like my suite. Fancy, rich, and expensive. I climbed up on one of the stools, and the bartender came over and...
Yes, sir. May I serve you, sir?
Got any ginger ale?
Yes, sir. What with, sir?
Oh, by itself. Just a glass of ginger ale.
Just a ginger ale?
Oh. You see, I like the bubbles.
Champagne has bubbles, too.
But they're still around the next day. Just a ginger ale.
Yes, sir. Of course.
Excuse me. Is someone sitting here?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Thank you.
Here you are, sir. Ginger ale.
Thanks.
The usual, please.
Okay. Yes, sir. May I?
You got a light?
Of course.
Thank you.
Don't mention it.
Here you are.
Thanks. Why do you drink ginger ale?
I like it. Why do you drink martinis?
Same reason, I guess.
It's a brilliant conversation, isn't it?
Well, I've heard better.
You're not very friendly, are you?
A Boy Scout is always friendly.
And does good turns. So I hear.
Do you want to be helped across the street?
All right. I'll shut up.
I took a good look at her. There was something scared looking about her. She was nervous. Well, so was I, because the minutes were passing and I still had that money. And I wanted to get rid of it. But I wondered about the girl, whether she had any part in this. I watched out of the corner of my eye. She picked up her bag, reached for her lipstick, and then...
Oh, clumsy.
So it's true what they say about women's handbags. You get the stuff on the bar, I'll pick up the kitchen sink off the floor.
I'm so sorry. Did the powder spill on you?
No, it's all right. Yeah. Here you are.
The mirror didn't break, did it?
Nope, you're still good for 7 years more.
Thanks. Thanks ever so much.
I told you I was a good boy, Scott.
You have a nice smile.
Want a toothpaste commercial to go with it?
Don't be nasty.
I'm sorry. Guess I'm just as nervous as you are.
Let's talk about something else.
She chattered away. And
it really is.
I listened
lovely
with half
place,
an ear. Once in a while, threw in a yes so or a no. So and the clouds began to gather. The mirror at the back of the bar went back and forth. The people got bigger and shrank to midgets. Somebody drove a plane through my head. It buzzed around and made a bad landing on my brain. And...
There you are. Feeling better now?
Oh.
You'll be all right. Just lie there. Take it easy.
Sure, I... Hey. Hey, I'm in my room.
Of course. We brought you here.
We?
I'm the hotel physician, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, what happened?
Just a fainting spell. Nothing serious.
Fainting spell? What are you talking about?
They're fainting spells. Your wife told me you'd get them.
My what told you what?
No. Just lie back.
Whose wife said what?
Your wife. She's got to have a prescription filled.
Now, listen, Doc, I... Hand me my coat, will you?
It's better if you lie here.
It's better if you hand me my coat. Give it to me.
Oh, very well. There you are. What's the matter?
Was my wife in this room?
Of course. She came up with me.
Uh-huh. Doc, what would you do with $126,000?
What? That's an odd question. What would you do with it?
I don't know. Because I haven't got it anymore.
Now, back to Triple Cross. Another Box 13 adventure with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
So there I was, $126,000 in the red. If it was meant to be taken from me, then somebody was working it the hard way. Sure, the girl slipped something in my ginger ale when I picked up the stuff that fell out of her handbag. She took the money. All right, I wanted no more of it. I was going to head for the nearest exit, running, not walking, when... Come in.
You Holliday?
Yeah. Do I know you?
Call me Tony. I'm the guy who wrote the Box 13.
Oh. All right, goodbye, Tony.
Sit down.
What's your idea?
Funny, I was going to ask you that.
We're playing 20 questions. Let's skip the other 18, Tony.
I got a big one left. Where's the dough?
You tell me.
Give it to me.
Well, I didn't like him. I didn't like the gun he was playing with either. And I didn't like the little white scar over his right eye or the little black mustache. I was willing right then and there to cross him off my friendship list. But I told him what happened.
It's a great story. Ain't heard one like it since I read fairy tales.
Well, I don't care if you believe it or not.
You got no regard for your health, Holliday.
Look, Tony, I'm leaving this place
now. You'll
be
too heavy to carry out if you take one more step. That's better. Now, what kind of a frame is this?
Once more, you tell me. I played a crooked wheel downstairs. I don't like that.
You got adventure, didn't you?
I don't want anything that's crooked.
Look who's talking. Who was the girl?
Believe it or not, I never saw her before.
What did she look like?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Ever try to take a good look at anyone in that bar downstairs? It's too dark to even see a lighted match.
You're smart, Holliday. The game with the girl is neat, awful neat. You get the dough, play doggo,
Act like the girl slipped you, Mickey. Later she turns up at the door and you two split.
Now talk sense, Tony. I didn't know why I came to Los Morris in the first place. I didn't know how I was going to get that money. How would I have time to dream up that frame with a girl?
Yeah, I never thought of that. Okay, Halliday, maybe you're telling it straight.
Okay. Now can I go?
No. You get that money back first, then you can go.
I don't think I'll stay for the ninth inning, Tony.
The game has not started yet, but you get that dough.
How?
That's your problem, but get it.
Look, Tony, I'm backing out of this. You know I can go to the sheriff.
No, you won't. Because there'll be a tail on you from now on out. One move like you're going to the law. Understand?
Okay, I get it.
And there'll be somebody in this room to see that you don't use the phone. You'll be covered like a pool table, Halliday.
What if I can't find the girl? What if I can't get the money back?
The boss will be awful mad.
And?
There are worse places than Los Morros to spend a lifetime. If you live.
Ever have one of those dreams in which you try to run away from something and can't? Well, this one, with my eyes wide open, was really something. Tony and I went downstairs. Two other characters detached themselves from chairs when Tony nodded at them. Brother, I was covered. It looked hopeless. With Tony not far behind, I asked the doctor if he'd ever seen the girl who said she was my wife. Well, there was no dice there. Then I remembered something. I told Tony I was going back into the bar.
Bar? What for?
Now, look, Tony. Let me do it my way. I'm the one that's on the spot, so let me play it the way I want.
Okay. I'll watch, and don't try for a quick steal, because the boys outside know who to look for. Go ahead.
Thanks. What would I do without you, Tony?
I don't know, because you're not going to be without me. Remember, I'll be watching.
Yes, sir. May I serve you? Well, feeling better, sir?
Well, much. Where were you when I fainted?
At the other end of the bar, sir.
Oh, yeah. So you were.
It wasn't our ginger ale, sir.
No, it wasn't. I just have a loose head, and when I shake it, it comes off.
May I serve you something, sir?
Yes. An answer to a question.
Well, what's that, sir?
Who was the girl who sat down next to me?
I don't know, sir.
Oh, yes, you do.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Quit the sir business. You knew that girl.
Why do you say that?
Because when she sat down, she asked for the usual, and you brought her a martini. And you said okay when she asked you.
What does that prove?
The martini proves you knew who she was. The okay means she wasn't a guest of the hotel. No bartender, as polite as you are, would say okay to a lady guest. That makes sense?
Why do you want to know who she is?
Does that make any difference?
Yeah, because I wouldn't want to see her in trouble.
I'll try to keep her out of it.
I won't tell you.
Ever see a picture of Alexander Hamilton?
Hmm? What are you talking about?
Well, here's one. And funny enough, it's on a $10 bill. In fact, his picture's on all five of these bills.
Yeah. Her name's Kathy Lee. I think she has a place at the Las Palmas courts.
Thanks. Put these pictures in frames, will you? I found the Las Palmas courts. And, of course, Tony behind me all the way. The name list in front said Kathy Lee lived in number 8. I looked around before I turned in the walk. Yeah, Tony was closer to me than varnish on a tabletop. I found number 8 and stopped for a second. Looked for a phone line, but there wasn't any. I knocked at the door. No answer. I tried it again. Then I heard Tony whisper from the shadows.
Try the door, Halliday.
I did. It was unlocked. Tony coached from the sidelines.
Go on in.
I went in and closed the door behind me. It was dark. I decided to risk a call. Kathy? Kathy? Kathy Lee? She wasn't there. I fumbled my way to what felt like a dresser and a lamp. Turned it on, and what I saw made me turn that light off fast.
What's the matter?
She's dead.
What are you talking about?
You heard me. She's dead.
You sure?
Well, go in and look.
You go back in and look for that dope. Go on.
Now look, Tony, I don't know any more of this. That poor kid's dead. Murdered. I want you to call the sheriff.
No, you don't. I said you go back in there and look for that dough.
You look for it.
Leave my fingerprints all over the place. Now you go back in there and hunt.
Don't be a sap. Whoever killed her took the money. Don't you see that?
Maybe. But we'll play this angle all the way. Now stop talking and get in there.
I hated to turn on that light, but I had to. I didn't look at her. I looked through the room. Then I found something. A plane ticket to San Francisco, leaving that night. And a boat ticket for South America. They were in an envelope, but the information on the envelope said there would be two reservations. I put it back where I found it because I didn't want Tony to find it on me. And there was something else. A locket with a man's picture in it. I took it off its chain and shoved it in my pocket, and I left.
Well, Helene?
It's not there. I told you it wouldn't be.
Stand still. Back toward it.
A frisk, Tony? You don't trust me, do you?
Shut up.
Well, I told you.
Who killed her?
Find that out, and you'll know where the money went.
Come on.
What's so funny?
Helene, right now I wouldn't want to be in your shoes.
Tony was right. People at the casino saw me win that money, and somebody must have seen the girl with me. Then I got the Mickey. The money was taken. The girl killed. Who did it? Me, Dan Holliday. Because the girl clipped me for the money. Well, this was a beautiful frame. Any art gallery in the country would be proud to hang it. But I knew something Tony didn't. The plane and boat tickets. Two seats. One for Kathy and her murderer. Somebody who left her tickets in her bungalow to make it look as though she was in on the $100,000 job by herself. Sure. Now her killer was taking a plane. In 1 hour. Then a boat to South America. I could have told Tony, but I wanted to wrap it up myself. Besides, I wanted to get the whole thing to the law. On the way back to the hotel, I figured something out for myself. But I'd have to see the boss of the casino, and I thought I knew how to do that without Tony tagging along. The casino was full. I stopped. Tony stopped.
What's the idea? What now?
I've got to think.
Up to your room.
No.
You want to get hurt?
Sure, go ahead. Shoot me. Now. In front of all these people. You know, Tony, you wouldn't get 10 feet.
Smart, ain't you? Okay, what's now?
I'm going to play blackjack.
What?
Want to watch? I sat at the blackjack table. I had as much interest in the game as Aunt Mamie back in Iowa, who never saw a deck of cards in her life. But I had an idea, and I played it for all it was worth. Look, dealer.
Yes?
I didn't like that last deal.
I beg your pardon, sir.
I said I didn't like that last deal.
Well, we'll return your money, sir.
Never mind the money. Who runs this place?
Hey, what is that guy trying to pull on over there?
It worked. In 3 seconds, I was surrounded by muscle boys, and Tony was hotter than a New York sidewalk in August. But he couldn't touch me. A minute later, I sat across the table from the owner of the casino. I told him what happened, and when I finished, he stared at me and said,
"You're trying to tell me somebody let you win that money on my wheel?"
I am?
You're crazy. The wheel's straight.
But you know I won that money.
Sure I do. Any time $100,000 slides across, I know it. But...
But this time it was fixed. The croupier was tipped I was to win.
Wait a minute. Marty, send Frankie up here right away. Huh? Oh. Okay, forget it.
What's the matter?
Frankie, the croupier, went off duty just after you won. He's not back yet.
And he won't come back. Now, somebody planned to take the house this evening for that money. Somebody who couldn't risk getting it himself. So I'm the logical one. No one knows me here. I'd look like just another player. Later, Mr. Fixit plans to pick up the money and beat it. Who? Someone besides yourself who could get to the croupier and bribe him to fix the wheel. Got any ideas?
Yeah. One. My partner.
Well, that's it, then. It's got to be.
But the girl, she doped you. That was a hard way to get the money from you.
Listen, I've got an idea, but I'm a little cramped for room. Some of your partner's boys, particularly a guy named Tony, are glued to me. Get some of your boys to shake them off, and I'll bring that money back to you.
How do you know where it is?
I know.
Okay, Holiday. Remember, fast play and I'll find you if it takes the rest of my life.
It's a deal. Now, how about the boys?
They won't follow you. Marty, a guy will leave my office. Some mugs are tailing him. Stop him. Got it? Good. All right, Holiday. You're on first base. Go ahead.
I was sure he'd be at the airport, and I wasn't wrong. He was sitting in the shadows on the outside. I walked over to him, and he looked up.
Holiday, I thought you would be...
Thought I'd be framed, huh, Frankie?
What are you doing here?
I've got a message from Kathy Lee.
Kathy? She's...
You ought to know. You killed her.
You're crazy.
Not only that, you've got $126,000 in that bag. $126,000 that looked like easy money.
Shut up.
That money doesn't mean a thing. It's the girl who counts, the girl who was willing to do what you told her to do. The girl you triple-crossed and killed after you double-crossed your boss who bribed you to fix the wheel.
It's too bad you're so smart, Holiday.
It's too bad you led with that right, Frankie. Somebody call the police to come and clean this up.
Was... Oh, please hurry, Mr. Holiday. I want to hear the ending.
All right, Susie, all right. What do you want to know?
Well, how did you guess that Kathy Lee was the croupier's girl?
Well, her locket had his picture in it.
Oh, they should have given you the money as a reward.
No, thanks, Susie, they can have it.
But there's one thing I don't understand, Mr. Holiday.
And that's?
You didn't get a tan at all. You're just as pale as when you left.
Oh, $126,000. A murder and a tan, too, she wants. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holiday in Box 13. Alan Ladd appears through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures. Watch for him in his new picture, Saigon. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville, with original story by Russell Hughes, and original music composed and conducted by Rudy Schrader. The part of Susie is played by Sylvia Pickard. Production supervision is by Vern Karstensen. This is a Mayfair production.
Triple Cross, an episode of Box 13, Alan Ladd, our star. And even though his name was not mentioned in the meager ending credits of that episode, I'm pretty sure that the actor portraying Tony was Frank Lovejoy, who is probably best known for his role as newspaper reporter Randy Stone in the early 1950s NBC radio series Night Beat. And with that, we come to the end of this hour of Old Time Radio. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. Please join me again when you can for another hour of sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.